Chapter 12. Death. Final flight of Orpheo's lament. Two souls. Zaphon lay dead at the creature's feet, his spine twisted, his armor broken, a death that showed no peace in rest. A meter from his outstretched fingers, his black steel Crozius rested on the deck, silent in deactivation. The corpse was called by its helm, its final face hidden, but the chaplain's scream still echoed across the Vox network. The sound had been wet, strained, half-drowned by the blood filling Zaphon's ruptured lungs. The creature turned its head with a predator's grace, stinking saliva trailing in gooey stalactites between too many teeth. No artificial light remained on the observation deck, but starlight, the winking of distant suns, bred silver glints in the creature's unmatching eyes. One was amber, swollen, lidless. The other, black, an obsidian pebble sunken deep into its hollow. "Now you," it said without moving its maw. Those jaws could never form human speech. "You are next." Argyltal's first attempt to speak left his lips as a trickle of too hot blood. It stung his chin as it ran down his face. The chemical-rich reek of the liquid, of Lorgar's gene-written blood running through the veins of each of his sons, was enough to overpower the stench rising from the creature's quivering, muscular grey flesh. For that one moment, he smelled his own death, rather than the creature's corruption. It was a singular reprieve. The captain raised his bolter in a grip that trembled, but not from fear. This defiance was the refusal he couldn't voice any other way. "Yes." The creature loomed closer. Its lower body was an abomination splicing between serpent and worm, thick-veined and leaving a viscous, clear slug trail that stank of unearthed graves. "Yes." "No." Argyltal finally forced the words through clenched teeth. "Not like this."
"Like this. Like your brothers. This is how it must be."
The bolter barked with a throaty chatter, a stream of shells that hammered into the wall, impacting with concussive detonations that defiled the chamber's quiet. Each buck of the gun in his shaking hand sent the next shell wider from the mark. Arm muscles burning, he let the weapon fall with a dull clang. The creature did not laugh, did not mock him for his failure. Instead, it reached for him with four arms, lifting him gently. Black talons scraped against the grey ceramite of his armour as it clutched him aloft.
"Prepare yourself. This will not be painless."
Argyltal hung limp in the creature's grip. For a brief second, he reached for the swords of red iron at his hips, forgetting that they were broken, the blades shattered on the gantry decking below.
"I can hear."
His gritted teeth almost strangled the words.
"Another voice." "Yes, one of my kin. It comes for you."
This is not what my Primarch wanted."
"This."
The creature dragged the helpless Astartes closer and burst Argyltal's secondary heart with a flex of thought. The captain went into violent convulsions, feeling the pulped mass behind his ribs, but the demon cradled him with sickening gentleness.
"This is exactly what Lorgar wanted. This is the truth."
Argyltal strained for breath that wouldn't come and forced dying muscles to reach for weapons that weren't there. The last thing he felt before he died was something pouring into his thoughts, wet and cold, like oil spilling behind his eyes. The last thing he heard was one of his dead brothers drawing a ragged breath over the Vox channel. And the last thing he saw was Zaphon twitching, rising from the deck on struggling limbs. He opened his eyes and saw he was the last to awaken. Zaphon stood stronger than the others, his Crozius maul in his hands. Through the blur of Argyltal's returning consciousness, he heard the chaplain speaking orders, encouragement, demands that his brothers stand and pull themselves together. Dagatal remained on his knees, vomiting through his helm's mouth grill. What he produced from his stomach was much too black. Malnor leaned against the wall, his forehead pressed to the cool metal. The others were in similar states of disarray, hauling themselves to their feet, purging their guts of stinking ichor, and whispering litanies from the word. Argaltal couldn't see the demon. He looked left and right, targeting reticule, not locking onto anything. "Where is Ingathel?" he tried to ask, but the only sound he made was a sick, thick drawl of wordless growling. Zaphon came over to him and offered a hand to help him rise. The chaplain had removed his helm, and in the chamber's gloom the warrior priest's face was unnaturally pallid, but otherwise unchanged.
"Where is Ingathel?"
Argaltar repeated. This time the words came forth. It was almost, but not quite, his voice.
"Gone," Zaphon replied. "The Vox is back online, and power has been restored to the ship. Squads are checking in from all decks, but the demon is gone."
Demon. Still so strange to hear the word voiced out loud, a word from mythology, spoken as cold fact. Argaltal looked up at the glass dome ceiling, looking out into the void beyond. There was no space. Not true space, at least. The void was a swirling, psychotic mass of flensed energy and clashing tides. 1,000 shades of violet, 1,000 shades of red, colours humanity had never catalogued, and no living beings had seen before. Stars, stained by the riot of crashing energies, winked through the storm like bloodshot eyes. At last, in the window's reflection, he saw himself. Pearls of sweat rolled down his face. Even his sweat stank of the demon, bestial, raw, ripe, the reek of organs failing to cancer.
"We need to get out of here," said Argaltal.
Something moved in his stomach, something cold uncoiling within him, and he swallowed acidic bile to keep from throwing up.
"How did this happen?"
Malnor groaned. None present had ever heard the stoic warrior so unmanned. Torgal staggered over to them, rubbing reddened eyes in sallow sockets. His chest plate was painted with a messy scorch streak of burned ceramite, the black acid burn of his vomit.
"We need to get back to the fleet," he said. "Back to the Primarch."
Argaltal caught sight of his own broken blades, scattered in jagged pieces across the decking. Repressing the sting of loss, he reached for his discarded bolter. As soon as his gauntleted fingers touched the grip, an ammunition counter on his eye lenses flickered at zero.
"First, we need to get to the bridge."
Every human on board was dead. This was something Argaltal had first feared as he moved in a lurching stride from corridor to corridor. The fear became reality as more and more of the Seventh Company's squads voxed to report the same thing. They were alone here. Every servitor, every serf, every slave and preacher and artificer and servant was dead. Deck by deck, chamber by chamber, the word-bearers hunted for any sign of life beyond themselves. Smaller than De Profundis, the destroyer Orpheo's Lament was an attack ship, a sleek and narrow hunter, not a line-breaking assault vessel like many Astartes cruisers. Its crew numbered just under 1,000 humans and augmented servitors at full complement, in addition to the 100 Astartes, a full company's worth. 97 word-bearers remained alive. Of the humans, not one. 3 Astartes had simply not awoken as the others had. Argaltal ordered their bodies burned with the remains to be blasted out of an airlock as soon as the ship managed to get clear of the warp storm. When, and if, that would ever be. Evidence of the human crew's demise was everywhere to behold. Argaltal, bred without the capacity to feel fear, was not immune to disgust, nor shielded by his genes from feeling regret. Each corpse he passed watched him with a lifeless stare and open jaws. They screamed in silence. Shrunken, yellowed eyes accused him with every step he took.
"We should have defended them from this,"
he murmured the words aloud without realizing.
"No," Zaphon's tone invited no argument. "They were naught but resources for the Legion. We do the Legion's work, and they were the price we paid."
Not the only price, Argaltal thought.
"This decay," he said. "I don't understand."
The captain's pace was increasing with each step he took, and the closer he came to the bridge, the nearer he found himself to running. Strength flooded him, its presence a welcome contrast to the weakness only minutes before. The hallway was a major thoroughfare running along the ship's ridged back like a spinal column. At all hours of day and night, it was busy with crew members going about their duties. Except now. Now it was silent but for Argyll Tarl's footsteps and his closest brothers with him. Rotting bodies lay gaunt and withered along the decking, husked by the dry, stale air put out by the ship's oxygen scrubbers.
"These bodies have been dead for weeks," said Zaphon. "That's not possible," Malnor said. "We were unconscious for no more than a handful of minutes."
Zaphon looked up from where he knelt by the desiccated corpse of a servitor. Its bionics had shaken loose of the withering organic limbs and lay pristine on the floor.
"Unconscious?" He shook his head. "We were not unconscious. I felt my heart burst in that beast's claws. I died, Melnor. We all died, just as the demon said we would." "My heart's beat now," the sergeant replied, "as do yours."
Argyll Tarl saw the same. Retinal displays didn't lie.
"Now," he said, "is not the time. We need to get to the bridge."
The warriors moved again, stepping over the dried corpses that grew more frequent as they neared the command deck. 81 dead bodies waited for them on the bridge. They lay sprawled or sat hunched, with several locked fetal on the floor, while others were cringing, curled in their seats.
"They knew what was happening," said Zaphon. "This wasn't fast. They felt something as they died."
Argyll Tarl hesitated by the twisted figure of Captain Jaina Sylamore, curled in her throne as if she sought in her last moments to escape something that prowled nearby. Her sunken features, almost mummified, told him all he needed to know.
"Pain," he said. "What they felt was pain."
Dagatar was already by one of the drive consoles, dragging an officer's body off the controls. The cadaver slumped to the decking, only to find its rest further disturbed by Zaphon, who set about examining it, carving into it with his combat blade. Dagatar swore in back alley called Chizian.
"I drive a jet bike, sir. I can't fly an Imperial warship, even if we had the slaves necessary to feed the engine furnace."
Argyll Tarl turned from the ship's captain's husk.
"Just give me an overview."
His voice still didn't sound, didn't feel quite right, as if someone nearby was speaking the words in unison with him, in mocking chorus.
"We're dead in space."
Dagatar adjusted more controls to no effect.
"Power hasn't been restored to all systems, not even close. The Geller field is enabled, but we lack void shields, plasma propulsion, energy weapons, projectile weapons, and life support on half the decks."
"Maneuvering thrusters?"
"Sir?"
Dagatar hesitated.
"We've drifted significantly in the storm's tides from where we came to all stop. Taking that into account and lacking warp flight, on maneuvering thrusters it will take us at least 3 months to break clear of the nebula."
"It's not a nebula," Zaphon murmured. "You've seen what's outside. It's not a nebula."
"Whatever in the name of hell it is,"
Dagatar snapped back.
"Hell is a good enough word for it,"
Zaphon muttered, still distracted in his work. Argyll Tarl lifted the body of Captain Sylamore from the oversized Astartes command throne, laying her to rest at the edge of the command deck. When he returned, he took her place, his armor clanking against the metal of her seat.
"Fire the thrusters," he ordered. "The sooner we begin, the sooner we'll be back with the fleet."
"Bloodless," Zaphon announced.
He rose from his knees, blade in hand, the grisly dismemberment complete at his feet. Vox officer Amal Vray's autopsy would never enter any official record, but it was unarguably thorough.
"The bodies," Zaphon said. "They're bloodless. Something leached the blood from their veins, killing them all." "Ingathel?" "No, Ingathel was with us. Its kin did this."
Its kin. The demon's words resurfaced in Argyll Tarl's aching mind.
"Yes, one of my kin. It comes for you."
He felt something slither within him, something stirring, wrapping around the bones of his arms and legs, coiling in a tight spiral around his spine.
"Summon every warrior to the bridge,"
he ordered, hearing his own voice echoing in his mind, a silent chorus twinned with his words.
"And Dagatar," said Argyll Tarl, "get us out of here."
The ship that limped its way from the warp storm was a far cry from the noble imperial vessel that had cut its way in. It trailed psychic fog around its membrane-thin Geller field, turning in a slow roll that spoke of flawed guidance systems and damaged stabilizers. Pulsing from its mangled communications towers was a repeated message, the Colchisian words rendered into fuzz by detuned vox.
"This is the Orpheo's lament. Critical casualty sustained. Grievous damage. Requesting extraction. This is the Orpheo's lament."
"Contact re-established with Orpheo's lament," called out one of the bridge crew. The command deck of De Profundis was alive with activity. A hive of officers, servitors, analysts, and crew members of every stripe, all working around a central platform that rose above the consoles. On the platform, a golden giant in robes of grey silk watched the Oculus screen. His face, so close to the face of his father, was softened in a way the Emperor's never was. Lorcar was both curious and concerned.
"Already," he said, glancing to the officers of the Vox console.
"Sire,"
the Master of Orspex called from his bank of flickering monitors,
"the ship is horrifically damaged."
The bustle of the bridge began to quieten as more and more crew members watched the Oculus, seeing the Orpheo's lament in its powerless drift.
"How can this be?"
Lorgar leaned on the handrail, ringing the raised podium, his golden fingers gripping the steel.
"That's not possible."
"Receiving a distress pulse," said one of the Vox officers.
"Sire, my Primarch, the Orpheo's lament has suffered critical casualties. We're getting an automated message."
Lorgar covered his parted lips with a hand, unable to conceal his unrest where another Primarch might have stood stoic. Worry was etched onto his handsome features, replacing the confusion that had taken hold moments before.
"Play the message, please,"
he asked in a soft voice. It came through in a crackle of vox grating across the bridge speakers.
"This is the Orpheo's lament. Critical casualty sustained. Grievous damage. Requesting extraction. This is the Orpheo's lament."
"How can this be?"
he asked again.
"Master of Vox, get me a signal to that ship."
"By your word, sire."
"Argel Tal."
Lorgar breathed his son's name.
"I know his voice. That was Argel Tal."
At his side, Fleet Master Balok Torvus nodded, his stern features emotionless where his Primarchs were tormented.
"Aye, sir."
It was. Contact took 3.5 minutes to restore, during which the rest of the 1,301st Fleet had raised its shields and armed all weapons. Tugships sailed from the flagship's docking bays, ready to drag the limping lament back to its sister vessels. At last, a picture resolved on the Oculus, showing the other vessel's bridge. Audio contact flickered back a few seconds afterwards, heralded by a burst of static.
"Blood of the Emperor,"
Lorgar whispered as he watched. Argel Tal wore no helm. His face was gaunt, a pathetic wraith of his former vitality, with his eyes ringed by the dark smears of countless restless nights. Speckles of old blood decorated the left side of his face, and his armour, what was left of it, was pitted and cracked, devoid of any holy parchment. He rose from his command throne on unsteady legs and saluted. There was the softest bang as his fist hit his breastplate.
"You're still here,"
he rasped. All strength was gone from his voice. Lorgar was the one to break the silence.
"My son, what has befallen you? What madness is this?"
Behind Argel Tal, other figures were moving into view, word-bearers all. They were just as weak, just as ruined as their commander. One fell to his knees as Lorgar watched, praying in a senseless stream of conflicting words. It took several moments for the Primarch to realize it was Zaphon, recognizable only because of the broken black armor. Argel Tal closed his eyes, letting out a breath.
"Sire, we have returned as ordered."
Lorgar glanced at Torvus before turning back to Argel Tal.
"Captain, you've been gone no more than 60 seconds. We just witnessed the lament enter the edges of the storm. You returned to us less than a minute after your departure."
Argel Tal scratched his ravaged face, shaking his head.
"No, no, that cannot be."
"It can be."
Lorgar stared hard at him.
"And it is. My son, what happened to you? 7 months.
The captain sagged, leaning on the arm of his throne to keep standing.
7 months. There are barely 40 of us left. No food. We ate the crew. Hateful mouthfuls of leathery flesh and dry bones. There was no water. Water tanks ruptured in the storm damage. We drank promethium fuel. Weapon oils. Engine coolant. Sire, we've been killing each other. We have been drinking each other's blood to stay alive.
Lorgar looked away only for long enough to address one of the Vox officers.
Bring them in, he said, pitching his voice low. Get my sons off that ship. Sire! Sire!
I am here, Argaltal.
The Lament has had its final flight. We are on guidance thrusters alone.
Thunderhawks are already launching, the Primarch assured him. We will return to safer space together.
Thank you, sire.
Argaltal,
Lorgar hesitated.
Did you slay the crew of Orpheo's Lament?
No. No, sire, never. We ate their carcasses. Carrion feeders. Like the desert jackals of Colchis. Anything to survive. We had to bring you the answers you sought. Sire, please, there is something you have to know. We have the answers to all your questions, but one above all.
Tell me,
the golden giant whispered. He was unashamed of the tears in his eyes to see his sons reduced to this.
Tell me, Argaltal.
This place, this realm, future generations will name it the Great Eye, the Eye of Terror. The Ocularis Terribus. In hushed voices, they will give 1,000 foolish names to something they cannot understand. But you are right, my lord. Here.
Argaltal gestured with a weak hand at the seething warp storm visible through the bridge windows.
Is where gods and mortals meet.
Soon he was in isolation, taken from his brothers. This was not entirely unexpected, but they had also taken his weapons for much-needed maintenance, brother, and that he'd not foreseen. They were cautious around him now. The escorts walking him to his meditation chamber had been tense, reluctant to speak, hesitant to answer even the simplest questions. Never before had he felt this raw distrust between brothers. He knew what its genesis was, of course. The truth could never be hidden, and he had no desire to hide it. Yes, the survivors had eaten the human dead. Yes, they had butchered their own brothers. But not for sport, not for glory, for survival. To quench a lethal thirst with a coppery wine that runs from cut veins. What other choice was there? To die? To die away from the fleet, with the answers to every question the Primarch had ever asked, locked behind their dead lips? But you did die. The traitorous thought rose behind his focus. You did die. Yes, he did. He died before he chewed on the leathery skin of bloodless bodies, before he'd used his dagger to slice open his brothers' throats and drink their life to sustain his own. Some of them had died twice then, a final death to fuel the lives of those who would survive. 38 word-bearers had left the wreck of Orpheo's Lament. 38. From 100, far below half strength. Seventh Company was devastated. Argaltal drew in a shivering breath. Every time he closed his eyes, he saw the storm outside. In the warp's roiling tides, 10 million faces silently screamed his name. He saw their lips moving, their teeth bared, their faces formed of clashing psychic energy spilling across the ship's Gellerfield barrier. The flesh and blood of unformed demons, the raw matter of souls. He exhaled and opened his eyes. The walls of his personal chamber, his haven aboard De Profundis for so many years of the Great Crusade, seemed alien now. Strange how 7 months could change a soul. 7 months, and a skull full of unbridled revelations. The chronometer above the doorway mocked him with a date over half a year in the past. The Primarch's words were an unwanted truth. Seconds had passed at the edges of the warp anomaly. Months dragged by within. Stripped of his armour, the captain examined his wasted body in the reflection of his dagger, the only weapon remaining to him. A revenant returned his gaze, a skeletal, hollow-eyed creature on the wrong side of the grave. He lowered the blade and awaited the chime he knew would come soon. In his humility, Lorgar had never looked grander. He came to Argyltal wearing the layered, glyph-embroidered robes of a Covenant priest, with a hood raised, darkening his features. In his hands, he carried a small wooden chest. The box was open, revealing a selection of vulture feather quills and an inkpot. Under one arm, the Primarch bore a roll of papyrus parchments to record his son's words. As Lorgar entered, Argyltal saw the hulking forms of two word-bearers, brothers from the Serrated Sun, but not the Seventh Company, standing outside his door. Standing guard outside his door.
"Am I a prisoner, father?" he asked the Primarch.
Lorgar drew back his hood, revealing his eternally youthful face and the uncertain smile upon it. His grey eyes were heavy with emotion, and little of it was pleasant. He grieved for his sons, he grieved for what he saw now.
"No, Argyltal, of course you are not a prisoner."
Their eyes met in that moment, and Lorgar's smile froze on his perfect lips.
"The guards at my door would seem to suggest otherwise," said Argyltal.
Lorgar didn't answer. The beautifully carved wooden box crashed to the bare metal floor. The noise drew attention, and the bulkhead door slammed open. Two warriors from 37th Company came in, bolters aimed at Argyltal's head.
"Sire,"
they asked as one. The Primarch didn't answer them either. He stood in rapt silence, reaching out, almost touching the captain's gaunt face. At the last moment, he drew his hand back before his fingers brushed Argyltal's sunken flesh. Their eyes were still locked. Primarch and captain, father and son.
"You have two souls,"
Lorgar whispered. Argyltal closed his eyes to break the stare. Something, 100 somethings, slithered through his blood, worming within his veins, pushed on by his heartbeat. He rose to his feet at last.
"I know, father."
"Tell me everything," said the Primarch. "Speak to me of the demon and the world of revelation. Tell me why my son stands before me with his soul cleaved in two."